I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. It's Friday, which means it's time to look at the week's local news. Here with me in Studio 3 is Howard Manley, executive editor of the Bay State Banner, and media analyst Marcella Garcia. Welcome back, you two.
Hi, Callie.
Hey, Callie.
So we have to start with some, you know, sober news, Howard. The Bay State Banner, by virtue of a piece, a commentary written by Kevin Peterson, who often appears on this program, looks at the Carlos Enriquez arrest and through the lens of the toll that it will take or has even taken, even before we know what actually happens, on Black politics.
That is a very unfortunate situation, not only for Enriquez, but also for the Black community. This was a rising star. And to the extent that he will get the benefit of the doubt in some quarters, still doesn't negate the fact that you showed up at a woman's house at 2 o'clock in the morning and exercised the worst of judgments, no matter what the outcome of the legal system will be on that. So as it is now, there's no one running against him except in the general election, which will be Althea Garrison, a perennial candidate. But on the heels of Chuck Turner, Diane Wilkerson, and here's a bright young guy. This is not to say that he won't recover to some extent, but it's it wasn't a good week in Roxbury.
So can he be expelled if the worst possible scenario, I'm just taking it all the way to the extreme, from the House for on, I don't know, moral charges?
If he's
or
convicted
not,
of a crime, all that can happen. And so, yeah, that's, like I say, it's a bright career that's just strongly diminished as a result of those actions.
Marcella, what does it mean when the alleged victim, she came forward and said she was the victim, has presented herself in a press conference, you know, well-spoken, in a way that a lot of people will look at her and say she's quite credible. And,
right.
How does, you know, where did, and he's a guy, as he's in his own defense, what he said already is like, look, I'm not the guy that does this. I'm
right.
the one that supports women's issues.
Well, unfortunately, in cases like this, that's what it all comes down to, credibility. You know, it's she said, he said, you know, she obviously has the right to defend herself and do whatever or whatever she needs to do. It's definitely very, very bad in the context, like Howard was saying, in the context of Diane Wilkerson and Chuck Turner. And he was definitely someone, his track record says it all. You know, he has championed women's rights and domestic violence. That's not to say that he couldn't have done it, you know, and I'm not condoning it. But at the same time, it comes down to credibility. So I think she, you know, she's doing the right thing by standing up for herself and saying, this is what happened to me. He represents the most diverse seat in the Commonwealth. So it looks bad on Latinos, on the African-American community. So hopefully this would have a positive outcome for him, but and also for her, obviously. But again, it all comes down to credibility. What are the proofs? You know, who's to say that what happened? Because it was just the two of them.
Well, that's the difficult thing about all these sorts of cases. You don't know what happened except those two people.
Right.
But the impact is so great because it ends up in court and there's mugshot photos and all this stuff. And you're constantly saying, well, how long have you been beating your wife? That's the question that will be asked. It's extremely, extremely unfortunate.
Let me ask this of you, too, before we move on, and that is, in Kevin's commentary, he just noted for the record that notable community leaders were with Carlos Enriquez, representative, when he went in for his arraignment, and that Dudley Street Neighborhood Initiative executive John Barrows, Urban League president Darnell Williams, and attorney Hassan Williams. The Globe then went a step further and said this was a bad move, and they defenders
See, I'm glad
quick.
You brought that up,
yeah,
because
I know.
No, it is not a bad move to support your friend and professional colleague at a time when he needs it the most. That is not to say that these folks who showed up with Carlos don't abhor domestic violence.
Right, or that they're representing their organization. You know, they just have worked with Carlos and they know him.
You know, so let's just say that he's guilty. That's the time you need your friends the most.
Right.
He had this snap or something. Who knows what happened? The fact that his friend, the Globe, was wrong on that, that those guys should be able to maintain their friendship with someone at the same time expressing their outrage about what he did. It's two different Is it blame the crime and not the person?
I agree.
No,
the Globe is just
wrong.
Taking it
wrong.
To, it, you know, it doesn't, it, I, like you said, it's, this is when you need your friends the most. And that's not to say that they're not defending what he did.
No.
Or whatever it was that he did or the crime that
he's
accused.
In fact, they're probably hard on him, right? How you knew not to go there at 2 o'clock? I mean,
right.
You know, so no.
And this, again, this is people that have worked with him. They know him. So, of course, you would want to show support. I think they went too far.
I wanted to make sure I gave you a chance to comment on that.
I'm glad you brought that one up.
Now, speaking of leadership, and in this case, we're talking about growing leadership, Marcella, there is a Latina Leadership Initiative over at Harvard, and the focus is community organizing. Now, we know that that got a bad rep in some circles when President Obama was running for office because he was a community organizer at one point in his life and career. But this is a program that's geared toward identifying people who are already immersed in their communities and preparing them for leadership.
Right.
So why Harvard and why is this good?
Yeah, this is a very interesting program. This is the third year running. It's called the Latino Leadership Initiative. It's just 1 week, and they bring, well, this year they brought 40 Latino students. Most of them, mind you, the first person in their families to go to college. They come from Texas, they come from California, and even from Boston. UMass Boston is one of the schools or the universities partner with the LLI, the Latino Leadership Initiative. And it is, it's based at Harvard. And again, it's just 1 week. They gather or they bring them together and they give them classes on leadership, organizing, like you said.
And negotiation.
All this. And all of this are Harvard professors. Some of these students, it's the first time that they've ever left their home, like the first time they've ever gone into an airplane. Imagine to go to Harvard of all places. So it's very encouraging to see the impact on these young kids because they really do go back. And again, because this is the third year, now we have been able to see what the impact back in their communities has been. Like in Texas, I think the some of the people that participated in last year, or even the year before, have gone on in Texas, created their own leadership program. And, you know, like.
So it's working.
It's working. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're giving back all this, this instruction and this direct back to the community. So I it's like the article says, it's empowering a growing community. And one of the program directors says, these are the leaders of the future. This is the community of the future. Latinos are going to be a majority. So you want to make sure that they have the skills needed to lead.
No doubt. Some of them are probably going to end up being in political leadership. Power.
Correct.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, only the Republicans can make everything Obama seem to be a pejorative word. When did community activism become a bad thing? And so to know on a grassroots level that you can organize, have impact in your community, and you have a little sheen of Harvard on you, I mean, that's just, that's what we want. That's what we want. So, and that's a great story in the sense that Harvard is always criticized for this, that, and the other thing, and rarely given the credit for doing this kind of program.
This is why this story is very interesting. Again, the program has been in place for 3 years, and it's important to know that they're not looking for valedictorians or the best of the best, or the they're looking for students of any ethnicity with a track record of serving Latino populations. So, so that they can go back to their own communities and make a difference. And again, you don't associate Harvard with that, with this type of stuff regularly. So it's a great, great program. And again, 40 students were here. It was a week long. So hopefully they can expand them more or, include other universities and so forth. But it's good.
I think a lot of people may not be aware that Harvard is one of the leading centers of experts on negotiation. So even for that alone, not to mention the other people that they'll have be in contact with, that's pretty amazing. All right. Now, going to different colleges, community colleges, Howard, you note in the Bay State Banner that Governor Patrick, he didn't bury it, but it's down in the budget where nobody's looking. Maybe. He's gotten some funding, which allows him to be a step closer in beginning to put together this uniform community college plan that he wants to have.
I think it's a great idea. He said during his State of the Union address that he wanted to sort of prepare students for the coming workforce. And community colleges are the ones that sort of take that ground level, speaking of grassroots kids from the neighborhood who may not go to Harvard, but still can be trained to perform skills that state corporations need in terms of employment. So there's some astounding figure of the number of jobs that were available at the time of the State of the Union that were going unfilled because the companies couldn't find skilled employees. Now, one of the things is always a question, who should pay for that?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Raytheon and I have a specific skill set, you should pay the community colleges specifically to train those programs. Now, since they haven't really stepped up to the plate on that, the governor did find way down at the bottom, you know, couple millions, and it's going to spread it around. The other thing I think is very important is that there's got to be greater efficiencies among the 15 autonomous community college campuses. I mean, those things, and you just look at some of the salaries that are being paid, some of the inauguration expenses that some of these presidents have had. It is time to get that under control with a uniform curriculum, just in terms of saving money and creating more efficiencies at a time when colleges are $50,000 a year. So
community colleges,
more people are going to be attracted to go to a community college, get a skill, get a job, and then maybe go to a 4-year school. So this is a very Duvall's smart on this one. He's smart on this one.
Well, I will say there are people that don't necessarily agree with this, but he, in this budget initiative, has moved forward on it. I note that in your piece, he gets the oversight authority to appoint the college's board chairmen. So if you have that, I guess you get the people that agree with your program.
Exactly.
You get the funding incentives tied to student performance, and it gives the state oversight of college presidents' hiring, compensation, to and removal. Marcella, that's a lot going on there.
And you know, a couple of months ago, I was hearing of a group of Latino students, because that's the other thing need to mention, that a large proportion of the students or the population in these community colleges are students of color. So, for example, there was this group of Latino students at Bunker Hill Community College that were organizing and that were against this measure because they their reasons were, we don't need more oversight. We just need to participate more in the decision making. And they wanted to participate more in the school and the direction. And, of course, tuition was also a big part of it. So I'd be very interested to see their reaction to this and where that effort led. And again, this is just at Bunker Hill, and it was a group of Latino students who were very active in opposing this measure. And they were trying to organize different other community colleges in their efforts. So it remains to be seen. I think it's a good follow-up to this, how students are reacting to this.
All right. Well, I think by this budget measure, it's clear that he means business, Governor Deval Patrick, on this effort. Back over to you, Marcella. A very interesting poll by USA Today and Gallup, which kind of mirrors what goes on here in Massachusetts. The poll indicates that Latino voters consider themselves independent. And there's a part two of that. But for the beginning part, they say they're independent. They're not lined up with either party. I just wanted to note that in Massachusetts, the majority of folks are registered independents. People don't believe that, but that is the case. So they make a choice at every time whether they're going to go Democrat or Republican. Now, you can say it's typically a blue state, and mostly that means Democrats. But in fact, they have made the decision to register independent. So now, with that said, this poll says most Latinos are independent, but
leaning left.
Leaning left.
And voting for Obama.
But then there's another thing. There's something else to be said about that. But first, yeah, this was very interesting because it shows, or it demonstrated, I guess, the fact that the Latino vote is not that up for grabs as you know, as everyone has been saying. You know, the Latino vote, the problem is that it's not a monolithic thing. You know, it changes. Like this, just yesterday, a new poll was released saying that Latinos are not supporting Obama as much as before. Like, his support right now is at 59, whereas a couple of months ago was at almost 80%. So that's not to say that they're, you know, the rest is supporting Romney, but what these two polls say, I guess, is that they're getting increasingly disappointed at Obama's lack of action, even after he did, after what
That's
he did.
That's what's so surprising about the poll is that even after he took those grand steps.
But
to,
I think, right, I mean, I guess it's not enough. And it's,
it came
obviously maybe a little too late. Like you see, you start seeing all these stories about the people that didn't make the cut for this program, which is, you know, kind of like the Dream Act, but not entirely.
He issued an executive order, which for young people up to 16 brought here by their families under not under their own control. Mm-hmm. They came illegally, of course, but he's offering them a way to work here
and go to school.
It is not a citizenship program, but it's a huge relief.
It's a reprieve, yeah.
Yes, right. For a lot of those young people.
And then I think you have to be less than 30 years old. So for people that are 30, you know, in months, they're like, oh, I didn't make it. So people are still very not that happy with Obama's lack of action. And ultimately what the community, the Latino community wants is complete and comprehensive immigration reform. And, you know, who knows when that's going to happen? Obviously not.
Well, definitely not this election cycle.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think this is what the numbers say, even though the large majority, the majority of Latinos lean left. You know, they're still registering as independent because of that. And they're not supporting Obama as much now. And again, that doesn't mean that they support Romney, because that's not the case either.
Yeah, and we got to remember that it's still early. I mean, we're a world away from November election and actually casting the ballot. But the early indications, I think, are that I don't think the alternative voting for Romney, as you pointed out, is going to be an alternative come November.
Well, unless Marcella... Marcella Garcia, media analyst, and I'm also speaking with Howard Manley, who's the executive editor of the Bay State Banner. But unless he chooses Marco Rubio as his
Romney,
vice
president. That's the question of the 60, what is it called? The $1 million question.
Right.
Because Marco Rubio, of course, Latinos are, you got to remember he's Cuban from Miami. He does not support the Dream Act. He did
offer a version.
Which at the time was actually impressive. I was impressed with that because this is, of course, before Obama did this reprieve for illegal students. So that was just a move, right? A political move. But I don't know if he's going to be the right person for Latinos. I don't think the Latinos are going to vote for Romney just by virtue of having Ruby. And I think they know that. I think they're realizing that. But
let me just push back a little bit and ask this question. And that is, with President Obama, when he ran, there was a pride vote there. And there were a number of conversations with African-American conservatives who were quite torn. And one said, and I thought this encapsulated the feeling, do I stick to the principles that I have been advocating all of my political life? Or how do I look at my 3-year-old son and say I had a chance to vote for the first African-American president, whether or not I agreed with his policies, and I did not do so? So I see something that could work in the same way for Marco Rubio.
I don't think so, because, again, immigration is the big cloud, you know, hovering all over the Latino voting bloc. Seriously, like people say, oh, to some Latinos, it doesn't matter. It is the single most, the most important issue for Latinos. And I don't care what everybody says. I mean, even if you're...
It can't be underestimated.
It can be, you know, and I get this a lot from you know, Puerto Ricans that say, oh, no, we don't care about immigration because, you know, Puerto Rico is part of... But, you know, but they know people that care about these issues. And by proxy, they care about their fellow Latinos. So how can you support... somebody that's affecting the Latino community, or that is not going to help the Latino community advance, you know, just because he's Latino. See, that's the thing. Like I think the Latino community is very aware of the fact that you don't have to support somebody just because of the ethnicity. Mm. You have to be, because we've had so many challenges. I mean, maybe it's not the same with the African American now.
Well, no. But, Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court. There's a perfect example. I mean, people were torn about that appointment. That here's a guy. Yes, he's an African American, but he stood and has voted and has ruled against all things of interest of African Americans his entire history. So, yeah, no, I don't know. We're going to have to go with.
So you would support him just because that's my point.
Yeah, but like, it gave people pause, because I'm going to tell you, my late dad said, I don't know. You know, shouldn't people give him a chance? And, you know, that stopped conversation in the room and some parts of my family. But
I think you need to demand more of them because they're Latinos and you should be looking at them more critically, you know, and saying you're part of the...
Maybe let's not forget the bottom line here is that Romney's going to not take Rubio's
president. Well, we'll see, because Condi's also...
Condi's in the running.
She's in the running for the last two days.
That's Condi's rice. Okay, we'll see. All right, well, moving off our speculation to something that is a firm decision and one that many people are greeting very excitedly. Howard Manley on the Bay State Banner. You have a big piece about the Memorial Church naming Jonathan Walton as the new minister at Harvard's Memorial Church.
That is a very impressive, and I think Caitlin Kendall is a writer for us, and she's got a very nice touch. And he too was blown away when they actually offered him the job. I mean, this is a guy that taught at Harvard Divinity School, and it's two things. One, it's the Harvard Divinity School, it's Memorial Church, and then it's replacing a flat-out legend.
Right.
Peter Gomes had been one of the first African Americans of rank at that school for the last 40 years.
And in the spectrum of rank across the country, I mean, in terms of top ministers and top
there
everything.
Is no one better than Peter Gomes, and a delightful man and a great loss to everyone when he passed away. And so here's Jonathan Walton, a Morehouse man up from Atlanta, is preaching at Memorial Church. So I know I'm a little excited about to see what this new Harvard preacher could do. So,
all right. For those who don't know Morehouse College, it's one of the signature historically black colleges in the country. It is also the alma mater of one Martin Luther King Jr. And many, many others that you can name.
One being the foremost president of that school was Benjamin Mays. Right. And he's a legend.
Spike Lee. We could go on
Spike
and on.
Lee.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
So it is a powerhouse school. And he followed that up with a master's and a doctorate from Princeton Theological Seminary. So he is, he's obviously Harvard material, but still, that was for
well,
many
was the
unexpected.
Quote,
it was very interesting to read how Harvard President Drew Faust characterized him, because he said Walton hails from Atlanta, quote, and was intellectually marinated within the culture and tradition of civil rights and civil activism. Intellectually marinated.
We love that phrase.
Yeah, yes. Right. And he's a young guy, we should say. Peter Gomes was 68, 70?
Yeah,
how long was there? Was he there?
He was for a good 20, 30 years.
Yes.
I mean, he was
he's
the
young,
voice of Memorial Church.
So this guy is young, so he has a long a future ahead of him. I just love this quote in your piece. He says, teaching and ministry go hand in hand. I was living out my call to ministry within the vocation of being a scholar of religion. For the past 7 years, my pulpit has been largely the publishing realm and behind the podium in the classroom. So in many ways, I see Memorial Church as an extension of the work I've already been doing. I just have to do it every Sunday.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's
very
that's something that
him.
People will be going flocking to Memorial Church to hear him. speak, because Memorial Church, while a part of Harvard, we should say, is really a part of the community.
Church, that's
yes,
totally.
So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, Marcella Garcia, Chica, something I had not known about before. It's a big mentoring program for young Latinas.
Right.
Tell us about it.
Speaking about mentorship and leadership in the Latino community, this is a young program created by a local community and political activist, a Latina, Nuris Camargo. It's a year-old program, and Chica, I should say, translates to young Latina, basically. So what she does is that she offers young Latinas an opportunity to work with public officials like Senator Sonia Chang Diaz has participated in the program, even Governor Deval Patrick. So she immerses the girls in this environment, but not also giving them the opportunity to work as interns, for example, but they offer mentoring classes and leadership instruction too. So it's very encouraging. They had the first graduation. They graduated, the first couple of girls, and they had as their keynote speaker U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz, which, as you all know, is from Puerto Rican descent, and the top dog in the state when it comes to crime. She's a great example of leadership and in the Latino community. And to her credit, she's always very involved in these types. In fact, she was also a teacher, or rather participant, at the Latino Leadership Initiative at Harvard as well. So to her credit, again, she's very involved in the local Latino community. And again, this is for girls, for Latinas, young Latinas who are, you know, from Lawrence, actually, from Boston, from you know, these communities that there are, you know, urban communities that are always at risk. So it's a very, very encouraging program. And this is what we need in the Latino community. So it's very nice to see, you know, young people getting involved. And this program is being available to him.
Carmen Ortiz, I should also say, was the first in her family to go to college.
Right.
And that's part of her message whenever she speaks to young people, is that, you know, this is the pathway. This is my journey, and you can follow me on that journey. And it's fair to say that a lot of these young women would never have an opportunity to interact with someone like her.
U.S. attorney?
Yeah, that's
right.
Great. Yeah. So that's great.
Right.
And Howard, you know, just in closing, people hear the word mentoring, but it's really quite powerful in its impact.
Yeah.
You think about the impact that you can have on a child just by your presence, that you confirm what is in their heart. And I think for the mentor to be there at that moment of discovery, when a child, a young person, you don't even have to be a young person. You could still be mentored at the age of 50. And unlocks that intellectual curiosity. I don't want to go back to the intellectual marinade, but it's just one of those things. And you don't know who that person will be that will have that key. So you have to just take the chance. And there's a lot more programs. There's a lot more emphasis on hooking people, young people up particularly, with folks that are in their realm of interest. And so, no, you can't say enough of it. Mentoring youngins to get them on the right path, and to actually see a person that's a U.S. prosecutor.
They need examples.
To go into the courtroom, to go up to Harvard and see where all the great minds have been. And that's, know.
To show them that it's possible, because
that's
a huge deterrent.
Right.
You know, I see a lot of Latinas or Latinos young, like, you know, they think of all these barriers that they have to college, of course, money being one, immigration actually being another, but and to see that it is actually possible that this person had the same experience that I did and made it.
Yeah, and came from the same neighborhood, spoke the same language, and did the right
thing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, our task here is to look under the radar, and we've discussed so many of these stories that are under the radar, but I can't let you all leave when there's a couple of big stories that I'd like to hear you weigh in on. One being Mitt Romney's appearance at the NAACP. He's getting quite a bit of credit for just going, but as we all know, or if you don't know, he was booed loudly during part of that speech.
Well, why did he think that he was going to be?
Going to be a reaction. He wants I think, you know, the tough guy that sold this tough message. And kudos for Romney for standing up for what he believes. Kudos for Jeffrey Brown, who introduced him at the NAACP convention. Jeffrey Brown's a minister here. I don't know if he's registered independent, but he was definitely
the former head of the 10-point coalition.
He introduced him,
Reverend Jeffrey Brown.
Yeah, Mitt Romney. Yeah,
to his credit.
I did not know he introduced Mitt Romney there. I missed that.
I mean, Mitt, and this is a brilliant, again, this is a numbers game. So if you think that the blacks are, 98%, if you're Mitt Romney, you can get that down to 80.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And Mitt is not an unreasonable. There's plenty of black folks who believe that Obamacare, mother being one of them, is saying, no, we're not going to be able to take a lot.
So
there
there's
will
a vote.
Be. There's a vote.
Yeah.
See, you know, I'm telling you, there is wiggle room in the black community for Romney to siphon away some votes for Obama. So Obama has to lock up Latinos, gays, young people, Mormons. I don't know if he's going to have a shot at that.
So he can't bring him. He can't get 1% of Mormons.
I don't know.
I don't know if you all saw, there is a viral video going around sent out by Color Lines. It's a popular political blog in the African-American community. And all it is a Tumblr blog of photos of the audience at the NAACP while listening to Mitt Romney. Even my niece, my 20-year-old niece got this, and she's not on political blogs. She said, have you seen that? It's pretty hilarious. It is actually pretty hilarious. They managed to capture some facial expressions.
To his credit, it would take a lot of guts
and considering
to
there
stand
was a,
up there. And you know.
It was a mess with Politico involving a black reporter, Joe Williams, who left from the Boston Globe, who sent out a tweet saying that Mitt Romney was very uncomfortable around black folks.
Mm-hmm.
Joe was unsummarily fired the next day for this tweet that was a little out of control. And so I don't know if Mitt is more comfortable or less comfortable than he was, but he is.
But he's trying.
He
and even
went
with
down
Latinos
to the NAACP.
Too. Even with Latinos, too. Just a couple of days ago, they released their first ad in Spanish, narrated by Mitt's youngest son, who speaks fluent Spanish because he was missionary in Chile.
Oh.
So, and the Spanish is not, you know, obviously.
But that's okay. It's homegrown.
Right.
Yeah, right. No, I'm saying, you know, that's, you make
it's
that
trying,
connection.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you can see that he's trying. So who knows? You know, who knows?
And again, how he just has to siphon off enough.
Well, and let's not forget that George Bush did very well, the son. In his campaign, I mean, not
13%.
That's right. So, this is not an impossible task.
No,
and you have to do that. I will say, just as a personal note, looking at these journalism conferences happening this summer, a lot of them reached out to both presidential candidates trying to get them to speak, and they have done that in the past. Mitt Romney did not speak at the National Association of Black Journalists, nor did a number of his people show up, you know, for panels and other discussions, which was, you know, very much cited among the journalists, and I thought that was a mistake.
Yeah,
so if he's showing up here and that's the measure of what he's going to be doing or his people for the rest of the time, that certainly is something that folks will note and give him credit for.
Yeah, I do give him credit for that. That's it.
All right. So, send an email to Marcella at Howard. That was not my comment. Let me also ask you about the EBT reform that was passed and that Governor Patrick pushed back on. And the language that he used is that he felt that these measures were shaming poor people, that it's one thing to make sure that people are not not even overreaching, are abusing, that's the correct word,
the
welfare system, and that there must be those limitations in place to do that. But the point that these reforms were going to, he felt, were too strict, too harsh. Comments?
I haven't looked at all the fine line, but I mean, you don't want folks out using their EBT card, getting their nails done, buying a lot of alcohol. I mean, just sort of what is common sense here? What is reasonable? And it's all in the context of everyone should have dignity of their own human condition. And the state has offered to provide some assistance to folks. But again, it's all in how do you execute this? So as long as you can take an EBT card and go to your ATM and get cash, there is no way anyone can regulate that.
Right.
There's
always going to be abuses.
And that's it. So to the extent that you can minimize that, that's a good thing. But
shouldn't the abuses, the amount of abuse be taken into context? Let me just reference Kevin Peterson, who wrote the commentary for you earlier. He appeared on the show not long ago saying something I didn't know, that if you have access to cash, that there are some items you just cannot get with that card.
Right.
And it was something simple like diapers and some other things that, you know. And so I really hadn't thought about that. And he said, so now you're, you know, people who are following the law, who just are trying to help themselves out of a bad situation, hopefully a temporary one, are punished because these other people set up these scams.
Well, exactly right. And that's always the case. And that's why you have to sort of root that out as best you can. But let's say a cab fare. Can I get a cab? No. I mean, that is what they would call a never-ending process.
All right. So, there's no win-win here.
No.
I guess it's
is not to be as personal. I mean, and again, this is the modern-day politics where you I don't think the governor was right to liken people's opposition to that as an Arizonian draconian law.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, people have legitimate concerns about that, and they're not wrong.
All right. Finally, because Howard, we know how much you love sports. Ray Allen is leaving you, honey. Going to the Miami Heat. He's gone.
Ray Allen showed the reason that he has been a class gentleman in Boston for the last 5 years. And I'm not going to get into all the sort of differences that he may or may not have had with Rondo. The way that he has handled what was clearly a painful decision to leave a town that he, and he said during his press conference that he'll always remember game six, and the Celtics were down by 20 points, and everyone was on their feet and yelling, "Let's go Celtics." And he will always remember that. And I think, as he said, and he was very sort of sober about this, that I'll always be a Celtic. Yeah, okay, he's at the Heat, and LeBron, we get that, and we know he wants to shoot the ball more, but his work in the community with diabetes, the fact that his mother would always come to the games and have on silver shoes, look at my baby boy playing. Ray was a class man, and that is ultimately Boston's loss. Not to have Ray Allen playing for the Celtics.
Looks like he'll be bringing the Heat to Miami Heat.
Well, it'll be interesting when he comes, whether to people boo him. I think we should just boo him just because we're from Boston.
All right, you heard it from Howard Manley, not from me. Thanks, you too.
We've been talking
about local news and a few other things with Howard Manley, executive editor of the Bay State Banner, and media analyst Marcella Garcia. Music in the Berkshires sounds like Tanglewood.
Tanglewood, indeed. We've got Ron Della Chiesa, and we're going to talk a little Tanglewood in just a minute.
All righty.